Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English to Africa service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington, D.C.
And I'm the only candidate who is offering a better future, more sustainable peace, sustainable security, a country which will be at peace with itself and with its neighbors, where we will make sure that we have more development, that people will be uplifted from poverty. So I'm the hope and the light of Rwandan.
The leader of the opposition Democratic Green Party plans to contest for the Rwandan presidency in the coming July general election.
In some cases, a few officials will be arrested here and there, but in the political cases, you will see the executive headed by the president going silent. Once the will is not there, then you cannot talk about fighting corruption. It has to be the will.
An anti-graft campaigner calls on the Ugandan government to demonstrate its commitment towards the fight against corruption.
We want to encourage both parties to meet over whatever else remains to be resolved in order for country not to be sanctioned.
And Botswana calls for the removal of sanctions on Zimbabwe. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. In Rwanda, the leader of the opposition Democratic Green Party plans to contest for the presidency in the coming July general election. Frank Habineza is expressing confidence that voters who choose him over longtime leader incumbent President Paul Kagame. Habineza is also a member of the Rwandan parliament. Political observers say the opposition leader's chances are slim due to the political dominance of Paul Kagame, the governing incumbent and head of the Rwandan Patriotic Front, or RPF. He has been in power since 1994 after his military forces toppled a Hutu-run genocide regime and has been an elected president since April 22, 2000. Parliamentarian Frank Habineza tells me that Rwandans want change and he is prepared to bring it to them.
The party that I lead has already chosen me as the presidential candidate, and we've been preparing to stand in this coming election. I consider that I am ready to stand and to challenge President Kagame. The party has been making preparations since last year by establishing up party structures all over the country, the women structures, the youth structures, and other structures. So I can proudly say that right now we do have structures of women of the youth from district, provincial, and national level, which are already existing and which will help us to solicit for more votes in these upcoming elections. We've also been preparing our manifesto, and we do have a draft manifesto now, still collecting more ideas into our manifesto. We think that it will be all the process will be finalized by early April, and we plan to have a national convention in May, early May, to confirm the parliamentary candidates and the manifesto. But for the presidential candidate, I'm already confirmed.
But Frank, what are your realistic chances of winning this coming presidential election, especially looking at your past record where you have not really made any headway? Some Rwandans are asking.
I would say that the elections are different. The last elections we went into the elections was the first time we got into elections, and the party had just been registered there for 3 years. So we were still a new party. But right now, I would say that 7 years later, our party is officially 11 years old. So it's no longer 3 years or 4 years old. So we are a big baby. We are no longer a baby. Now we are a big boy as a party. And at that time, when we went to elections, we did not participate in any government structure. But after the 2017 elections, you know, we went into 2018 parliamentary elections and we got seats in parliament. Now I'm speaking to you as a member. I'm also a member of parliament. We have three parliamentarians. Two in the Chamber of Deputies, that's the lower house, and one in the Senate. So I'd say that our party is bigger than before. We have representation in the parliament. We also have other members who have been elected in the local government structures, like in local councils, district councils, and other local structures. So the party has been growing bigger, and we have representation in state structures, as I mentioned, and we have more youth than before. and more women than before. So I would say that our chances are really big. And also people are yearning for change. People are really tired of the same president for over almost 30 years, the same person. So people want to see a new leader who can have different vision, who can also make sure that what we have, the country has achieved is not destabilized, but we have to get something new. And I'm the only candidate who is offering a better future, more sustainable peace, sustainable security, a country which will be at peace with itself and with its neighbors, where we will make sure that we have more development, that people will be uplifted from poverty. So I'm the hope and the light of Rwandans.
If you think or you are saying the people of Rwanda wants change, then how come an opposition barely gets 10% of the total vote cast?
So things have changed. I'm very sure that the people, we have more voters, new voters than before, than that we had in 2017. So I'm very sure that things will change, not be the same as it was in 2017. So then the situations were different, as I mentioned, that we were very young party then, and people saw that we were not very experienced then. We have more experience, and something bigger than what I could say that than what we did before, that we made campaign promises in 2017. And also in 2018, before we entered the parliament. And most of the things we promised the people have been achieved. So people have seen that the Democratic Union Party of Rwanda and Dr. Frank Habineza are not liars. We are people who stick on our promises and we deliver on our promises. So people have more hope in me than before because they know that I've delivered and what I promised them, I'll stand on it and to be achieved.
Do you have confidence in how the Electoral Commission will organize and or administer the coming general election?
Well, we have issues with electoral commissions because we have asked that the electoral commission should accept commissioners from other political parties, like even my party. We have officially written to the Rwandan government, the prime minister, and the electoral commission, asking that our party should be included in the electoral commission, that we should have also commissioners on national level and other structures. But the electoral commission has not accepted, or the government has not accepted that to happen. So the reason we did that was that to ensure that the process is acceptable to everyone. We want also to be part of the people who count the votes. But anyway, if that's not happening, we still do our best and we hope for the best.
Parliamentarian Frank Habineza is the leader of the opposition Democratic Green Party. He spoke with me from the Rwandan capital, Kigali. The executive director of the Anti-Corruption Coalition is calling on the Ugandan government to demonstrate its commitment towards the fight against corruption. Marlon Agaba says recent allegations of corruption in parliament and other state institutions are weakening popular support in state organizations. His remarks come after local media reports of allegations of corruption against the Speaker of Parliament and other lawmakers, including the former leader of the opposition, Mathias Mpuuga. The allegations prompted the opposition National Unity Platform, or NUP, to demand Mpuuga's resignation. He has refused to resign, saying the accusations are not true. Marlon Agaba tells me that political will and commitment is needed to weed out graft from public institutions.
Well, of course, first of all, they are not new allegations. They've always been there. But I think now they've been brought most at light by a team of young people who are holding an exhibition on X. And, of course, the scale and magnitude of the corruption is quite unprecedented. Yes, we have known that Parliament is corrupt. We have received reports. But I think the difference right now is the evidence that is coming out and the magnitude and the sheer impunity that we have in our Parliament right now, I think is what makes the difference. Of course, the call on Honorable Mathias Mpuuga to step aside is also unprecedented because we have seen leaders being involved in several corruption scandals, whether in government ministers, even in opposition, several of them have been involved in scandals, but none of them has been asked to step aside or has actually stepped aside. So the kind of culture that NUP is creating, still it's one of its top leaders to step aside because it has been implicated in corruption, is also unprecedented in this country.
This allegations has also been leveled against top officials in parliament, including the speaker herself. And people are calling for investigations to determine where public funds usually go. Do you think these calls are legitimate?
They are legitimate calls because Parliament is Uganda accountability institution. It is mandated with holding other agencies of government accountable. It has an oversight function. But the problem has been that over time, Parliament itself has gotten eaten up by corruption, and we don't have a clear kind of oversight system over Parliament. When you look at what is coming out, issues of nepotism, members of Parliament recruiting their own relatives into parliamentary service, when you look at issues of theft of public funds by the Speaker, allegedly, through junior staff, when you look at members of Parliament awarding themselves money, when you look at bribery, which is budgeted because they passed a budget, members of Parliament, and they included their own cut there, their own piece of money to bribe them to pass the supplementary budget. So when you look at all these allegations, yes, I think the calls of having an investigation, they are calls that are quite welcome. But of course, unfortunately, from experience, having been in this space for some time, I don't see, of course, the investigations going on.
What do you think is the best way forward to address issues of corruption or to tackle it?
One is that the will must be there. Right now, we don't have a complete will. The will is mired. In some cases, a few officials will be arrested here and there. But in political cases, you will see the executive headed by the president going silent. Once the will is not there, then we cannot talk about fighting corruption. This country has to be the will, but also the people on the other hand should really rise up, like how we are seeing young people doing, and say that enough is enough. I think for me that is a starting point. Either the will has to be there amongst our leaders, or the people must, through people-centered action, must force the government to have that kind of will. I think once that is there, then you can look at the other issues. And of course, the other aspect is looking at the culture, that because now corruption has become a culture in our country. It's a culture of entitlement. It's a culture we have adopted. It's something that we need to reverse and to take time. But I think once the will amongst our leaders is there, then the issues of culture and these other issues can be addressed. Because in terms of the legal framework, we have a good legal framework. We have the laws that are quite clear. We have institutions, we have financial intelligence, inspectors of government, auditor general. All these institutions are in place. We have the laws in place. We just need the will from our leaders to fight corruption.
President Museveni recently said that he will soon expose those who steal public money. That, his supporters say, is a demonstration and commitment to the fight against corruption in Uganda. What say you?
And he's the same person who previously has told the Inspector General of Government to go slow on thieves, because in his opinion, he said that we are still lucky as a country. Public officials are stealing money in Uganda and investing in Uganda. In fact, he warned the Inspector General of Government that once you go after the thieves, they might take the money out of the country. He's on record saying that. He's also on record saying that I will not run away from my friend when they're in trouble, when the former prime minister was involved in a corruption scandal and he was defending him. And so really, the rhetoric in terms of what he says and what he does, they're completely different. And he has come up on several occasions to say that he's going to deal with the corrupt, and we haven't seen any action.
Marlon Agaba is the executive director of the Anti-Corruption Coalition in Uganda. He spoke with me from the capital, Kampala. In Senegal, a spokesperson for the opposition Pasteur Le Patriot Party says Ousmane Sonko is the main reason the group will be victorious in the coming March 24 presidential election. Abraham Samaki says Sonko has helped attract young people. Sonko, an avowed critic of outgoing President Macky Sall and a former mayor of Ziguincho, came in third in the last presidential poll with 16% of the vote. He was disqualified from contesting as a candidate in the much-anticipated March 24 presidential election. For more on the party's preparation ahead of the campaign and its electoral prospect, I reached Abraham Samaki.
Okay, first of all, it's been a very, very, very hard situation. And first of all, we'd like to thank all the citizens of Senegal and everybody who took a place like to organize this. At this moment, everybody is ready, the whole youth, everybody, all Senegal is ready. Because for the first time in Africa, in Senegal, we have a situation where all the youth and everybody is involved. This is a very particular election, and this election means a lot for the Senegalese people, especially the youth. So everybody's ready, and we're intending to send a big message worldwide showing that the world, Senegal has changed, and we're going to change a lot of stuff within Senegal with Sonko in the power, actually right now with Jomai. So it's the same, actually the same candidate, so we're all happy about it. And finally, that the Constitutional Council have fixed the date on the 24th, and today everybody's happy, and we just hope that everything's going to be okay.
What do you think the chance of your presidential candidate is, looking at the field of those who are qualified to contest in this presidential election on March 24th?
Okay, first of all those that are qualified, actually, it's Sonko, it's our party who gave them that credit to be able today to represent themselves at the election. And everybody, actually, our party is actually right now so well placed, and we hope and we know that we're going to win. And even without that, even without nobody, we're not saying that we don't need anyone, but even without it, we're pretty sure that the victory will be ours in the first tour.
What makes you such confidence? Because outgoing President Macky Sall has somebody who he backs as the ruling party's candidate. With the power and resources that the ruling party has, you will defeat them in the coming elections.
Well, it's very easy. First of all, with all the power that they had, all the resources, today we came to the position where the whole country is disappointed about this government. This is the reason why, actually, all the countries, especially the youth, has taken a step and say no, because all our resources have been used in misuse in every bad ways. And today, Sonko has came up with a brand new plan, an anti-system plan, and we all bought that project, and that's why today everybody is happy about this. And even if you come right now in Senegal, wherever you go, to the smallest place, to the shops, wherever you go, everybody's screaming Sonko, Sonko, because he has shown us what we want. He represented what the youth wanted to be, and this is exactly today what the youth is claiming: a better management for our resources, a better president, and everything, because right now the situation is very chaotic in Senegal.
What are your expectations of how the elections will be organized by the Electoral Commission?
Well, you know, with this government, we're just ready for anything. I mean, you saw everything we went through today to be able to have this this date. And we keep on saying thank to the Constitutional Council for this. But today, we're just ready for anything. And we've been ready for everything. That's why today, as I said, we have this this date. So we're ready to go. No matter what happened, we're confident that we're going to get this. And no matter what they will do, no matter what they will put into this election, we're ready, and we know that we're going to make it, and we know that with or without whatever they're going to bring, we're going to make it, and we're going to break through, and we're going to get this election done.
What role do you think Ousmane Sonko can play, your party's prospect?
Well, he has played already everything. He represents everything. He's the one with the population and everything. He's the one who did everything. And today, for some reasons that we all know, he has been detained illegally. So he represents everything. And even today, Jomai, that who's going to be there on the 24th, it's because it's Sonko designation. So everything is here. He plays every role, and he's still present as he has never been in jail. He's still present as he's in our heart. He's present as the air we breathe, and he's with us in 24 hours, second by second with us. He plays every role for this.
So
you're so glad and proud.
So you think it is because of him that you are going to win the election? Is that what you are saying?
Absolutely, absolutely. That's because of him, because he's the one who made it, who woke up the youth, who gave us a program that we can be able to really see ourselves. And this is what I gotta say. He's the man, and we're behind him.
Ibrahim Samake is a spokesperson for the opposition Pasteur Le Patriots Party. He spoke with me from the Senegalese capital, Dakar. In Malawi, a leading opposition parliamentarian is asking colleagues and opposition groups to stop castigating President Lazarus Chakwera. Simon Vua Kaunda from the Democratic Progressive Party, or DPP, says the president has delivered on his promise to improve living conditions. His remarks are attracting criticism after opposition supporters say his continuous praise of the president undermines efforts to wrestle power from Chakwera in the next general election. They are accusing him of planning to defect to the governing Malawi Congress Party, an allegation Kaunda denies. Parliamentarian Simon Vua Kaunda tells me that credit must be given to the president for keeping his promises.
I am calling upon fellow members of parliament and colleagues in the opposition to stop castigating the president. Let us respect the president because, you know, the president was elected through the ballot. And the Bible says all leaders are anointed by God. So our leader was elected and he deserves respect so that he can in turn serve us Malawians better.
But what do you say to critics who are of the view that in spite of your ideological and political differences, you are praising the president too much and that you should offer constructive criticism to help the government to do better?
That is absolutely correct, that as a country, we need to support the government. We need to support our president. Let's give him the support that he deserves so that he can serve the nation. Already he's doing a lot. And we guys in the opposition, we need to support the government so that the government can in turn serve us also better.
What do you say to your critics who are also saying that by heaping praise on the government, by praising the efforts of President Lazarus Chakwera, you are basically laying the grounds of possibly defecting from the DPP to join the ruling party? Is this the case?
No, I am not defecting and I have not defected. I am a member of the opposition DPP. But where the government has done well, we need to give credit. I say, bravo, this is okay. And what I'm saying is, for the president, he is visiting my area. Now, this is the fourth time. He came the first time for prayers. He came the second time to open a water project. He came the third time. Now, this is the fourth time the president is visiting my constituency. And I'm saying, lucky I am I. The president is visiting my constituency now a fourth time. Wherever the president does visit in a person, we have that opportunity of speaking to the president, presenting to the government the needs of our constituencies. We need good access roads. We need good clean water. We need good healthcare facilities. We need good schools. We need food aid. We need so much for the rural people in the constituency. Mine is a rural constituency. I need the support of the government. It does not help me just to be standing and castigating the president. Castigating for what? We have to support the president. We have to say where he has done well. Let's say, Mr. President, you have done well. We have to support the president.
So for your critics who are saying that you appear to be disloyal to your DPP and you are not performing your role as an opposition member of parliament to act as a check and balance on the government, but you are basically becoming a propagandist for the government, how do you respond to them?
Basically, that's what I'm saying, that I will not stand in the way of obstructing the projects or the programs of government. If it is the program of the opposition, just to be opposing for the sake of opposing, I will not be part of that. I can't be standing there to be obstructing the projects of government, obstructing the... It does not work like that. Where the government is doing well, let's say this is being done right. If we have to offer alternative solutions, let us present the alternatives in a polite way. You know, Malawi has been a peaceful nation throughout the time. We have to remain peaceful. The president is appealing for peace. unity in the country. Let us promote unity. Let us promote peace. I am a member of the opposition. But when the president says his program, he has no problem inviting members of the opposition to say, can you come? I am in your constituency. And he gives us a platform to speak. So I am not there to be castigating the president. If it is a problem of the opposition to be castigating the president for the sake of castigating, sorry, I'm not that type. Credit must be given where the credit is due.
Simon Vua Kawunda is an opposition member of parliament in Malawi. He spoke with me from the Malawian capital, Lilongwe.
On March 8, the world will celebrate International Women's Day under the theme Inspire Inclusion. On this week's edition of Our Voices, we will discuss what it means to truly inspire inclusion and how to forge a better world where women are empowered to innovate, lead and inspire future generations. Join the conversation Wednesdays at 1900 UTC on the Voice of America.
Botswana, which supported calls for the removal of targeted sanctions imposed on Zimbabwe, has described the United States' move to partially lift the restrictions as encouraging. For viewing, Kodisi Dube reports from Botswana's capital, Gaborone.
Botswana's President Mokgweetsi Masisi, addressing the media in Gaborone Wednesday, said there is need for further dialogue between Zimbabwe and the United States to enable the complete removal of the sanctions.
It's very encouraging that finally some of our calls are being responded to in ways that will also help Botswana when those are done, and to promote dialogue on those aspects that the Americans deem offensive with Zimbabwe. So we want to encourage both parties to meet over whatever else remains to be resolved in order for country not to be sanctioned.
But Zimbabwe-based political analyst Reason Ngwenya says dialogue over the complete removal of the restrictions can only be possible if Harare meets Washington's conditions.
If there should be unconditional lifting of sanctions, it means that there should be unconditional governance in this country. We don't want corruption. We don't want opposition to be harassed. We want a free media. So until all those things have been removed, I don't think it is very possible that the Americans would want to sit down and negotiate anything. We should all be fair. We are all unhappy about these situations, but our government should also do its part.
The United States placed sanctions on certain Zimbabwean officials and companies starting in 2003 for alleged election rigging and human rights violations by the government of then-President Robert Mugabe. Although the U.S. lifted many of the restrictions this week, current President Emmerson Mnangagwa, his wife and some senior government officials remain sanctioned. Washington cites human rights abuses and corruption for extending the restrictions. Moeti Mwasa, spokesperson for Botswana's main opposition coalition, the Umbrella for Democratic Change, or UTC, says removal of the sanctions is only fair.
We believe this is a welcome development because the biggest victims all along have been the ordinary citizens. We had to endure economic hardships arising from the sanctions and grapple with atrocities and abuses visited upon them by the regime. We all know the people behind the political and economic abuse in Zimbabwe. The U.S. should not have scattered around the Zimbabwe situation. It was very unfair to have the Zimbabwean ordinary people suffer double jeopardy.
The Zimbabwean government says the sanctions were baseless, maligned the country and left its leaders without due process. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken says remaining restrictions imposed on President Mnangagwa and other officials are part of a stronger and more narrowly targeted sanctions policy. Mkondisi Dube, VOA News, Gaborone, Botswana.
A group of women from smallhold farms in Zimbabwe have mobilized resources to build a shelter for expectant mothers who live far from the nearest clinic. It can literally save the lives of pregnant women who cannot reach a clinic in time to give birth. For VOA Colombo's Mavunga reports from Mashaba, south of the Zimbabwean capital, Harare.
Women in Mashaba are building and funding a shelter for expectant mothers who live far from the nearest clinic. The mothers will be able to stay here while they are waiting to deliver their babies at the Zwamahande Clinic, about 4-hour drive south of Harare. Joyce Mapako, who is leading the campaign, says the idea came after many mothers failed to reach the clinic before giving birth. She says because of the distance to the clinic, most women are giving birth on their way there, or some at home. In some cases, she says, some are lucky to get a car, but it comes speeding, causing accidents. So we resolved that to end that, we need to build the shelter. Mapako says it helps even after giving birth for a mother to have 2 or 3 days at the clinic while being assessed by health officials. Zimbabwe's Minister of Health and Child Care welcomes the development. Nyatwa David is the sister in charge at Zwamahande Clinic.
A mother's shelter is important in the sense that it reduces the number of deaths of children being born at home, being born during the way, on the way to the hospital, and it reduces the transmission of diseases like tetanus, because if it's conducted on the way, there will be no one who is able to provide safe delivery services.
A charity group, Voluntary Service Overseas, is training the smallholder farmers to push for access and quality health services in their community. The women are contributing $1.20 per household. Tekla Ponde heads Voluntary Service Overseas in Eswatini, Zambia and Zimbabwe. Ponde says her organization wants to ensure that women's sexual and reproductive health rights, or SRHR, are upheld in Zimbabwe.
So this shelter was key in that it would facilitate access to SRHR, enable women to access shelter and waiting areas whilst they are on prenatal, or even at least when their time is due. So it's very key for us to also look at women needs and how we support women.
Maternal mortality in Zimbabwe is 663 per 100,000 live births, according to results of the 2022 census, slightly higher than the 357 deaths per 100,000 recorded in 2020. The women of Mashawa are hoping their efforts will save lives and lower the number of maternal deaths. Columbus Mavunga, VOA News, Mashawa, Zimbabwe.
This is The Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa Sports with Samson O'Malley, and that will be followed by a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under Secretary General for Political Affairs and Music from African Collection. But first, it's now time for Nightline Africa Sports, and for that, let's join Samson O'Malley. Hello, Samson.
Hi, Peter, and good evening, sports fans. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports. FUS Rabat of Morocco inflicted Petro de Luanda their third straight defeat in the Basketball Africa League as the Kalahari Conference got on the way on Saturday in Pretoria, South Africa. BAL Doubleton, FUS Rabat beat Petro 82-72 in front of a sold-out Sunbet Arena on the opening night of the 2024 Basketball Africa League. Fellow Doubleton, Burundi's Dynamo silenced the packed home crowd and supporters of Cape Town Tigers with an 86-73 win. And now to the 13th All-Africa Games taking place in Ghana. Hailey Prine claimed Team South Africa's first gold medal after finishing first in the women's cycling road race on Saturday. The country's swimmers then followed up winning gold in the men's and women's 100 meters freestyle swimming. Meanwhile, Uganda's Anna Gloria Muzito won the first medal in swimming for the East African country as the US-based swimmer earned bronze in the women's 100 meters freestyle race inside the aquatic center at the Bertman Sport Complex in Accra. While in women's cricket, it was Zimbabwe who became the first team to record two straight wins to secure a semi-final berth after beating Uganda and Kenya before that.
They won against Uganda by 4 wickets after scoring 75-6 in 19.4 overs. In the women's football event, Uganda Under-20 Women's National Football Team was denied a perfect start to the All Africa Games 2023 in Ghana after drawing against Tanzania on Saturday. In the game played at the Cape Coast Stadium, Uganda took the lead through Margaret Kunihira, but Tanzania were able to salvage a point through a late goal by Aisha Juma Wunka. And out to boxing, where British Nigerian two-time world heavyweight champion Anthony Joshua made easy of a threat from Francis Ngannou, the Cameroonian mixed martial artist whose nascent career in boxing took to 2 knockdowns and a knockout in their fight on Saturday in Saudi Arabia. Joshua fought UFC champion in the first round and early in the second before delivering a destructive second round knockout. The victory is Joshua's 4th in 11 months and keeps alive his ambition of recapturing a world title for the 3rd time after his back-to-back losses to Alexander Usyk of Ukraine. And now to rugby, where Ugandan women have matched their 7th Challenger 2024 debut performance in Dubai by qualifying for the semi-finals in the second round in Montevideo. They beat Hong Kong China in the Cup quarterfinals by 22-17 points. Hong Kong China led at the break, but Uganda came back and forced a draw by full time. Uganda will now face China in the Cup semi-finals on Sunday. China had beaten Uganda at this stage during the Dubai round and went on to win the Cup. And that's it for this week's edition of Nightline Africa Sports. It's back to you, Peter.
Thanks a lot, Samson. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. We'll link up with you again next Sunday for another look at African sports. Nightline Africa Sports. Now let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospect in time of conflict, in time of peace. Here's one man's point of view with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under Secretary General for Political Affairs. Hello, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. It was announced last week that Somalia had been accepted as the newest member of the East African Community. The government of Somalia saw this as a main achievement of the government. Indeed, Somalia today is a far cry from the chaos and utter abandonment following the ouster of President Barre from Mogadishu and remaining on the soil of Somalia when he sought refuge in his hometown in the West. The situation was so bad that all embassies, except for a skeleton staff of that of Italy and Egypt, abandoned the country. Somalia became a failed state, and the life of the people indeed became dirty, brutish, and short. It was only when Boutros Ghali was elected as the first African Secretary General of the United Nations that he, as his first act of duty, requested me as a senior United Nations official to go to Somalia and explore the possibility of convincing the warlords who were in charge to accept some UN intervention. Many thought that was an impossible task. But fortunately, when I arrived in Mogadishu, with great difficulties, I was able to coax the warlords to accept UN intervention. That was how the United Nations Security Council was able to establish a peacekeeping mechanism primarily to assist in the delivery of humanitarian assistance to the people of Somalia. So this is a major time for Somalia. It had gone through difficult times, and it is today a functioning sovereign state that is now welcomed as a member of the East African Community. This is not to say that everything is clear. Yes, there are still threats from Al-Shabaab, and there is still risk from other terrorist groups. But it is a government that is recognized by many governments, and it is conducting a normal relationship with many African states and those of the international community. And there are reports that the government is trying to contain Al-Shabaab's threats, and also that the government is able to deliver good outcomes to the people. But there's one thing which is missing. Even when I made my first intervention in those difficult days in Mogadishu, I stressed to the warlord and other Somali leaders all over the country that the purpose of the United Nations is to establish a functioning state with full participation of the people by means of fair elections involving all the people. But for reasons well known, we began to utilize what was available, and that is working with the warlords and working with what was available in terms of contracts. It was through indirect means, but we have never abandoned the return of full participatory democracy. Regrettably, since the state is now functioning and some modicum of security has been maintained, the ruling political class and security class are not paying as much attention to the return of democracy. At every national election circle, the issue would be raised. Many would find reasons why it was not time to do that. But even the current government, when it was elected, had to make a pledge that one of its major functions will be to prepare the ground for the participation of the people with the broadened franchise and adult suffrage. Unless I am Yip Van Winkle that fell into slumber on top of the Cascade Mountain, I am not aware that this government in Somalia is putting much effort to prepare the ground for the next round of national election when the term of this present government comes to an end. So it is time for the partners of Somalia, United Nations, and African regional groups to urge the government to get going and not to find reasons at the end of the present mandate to say there are more difficulties and we should go back to the clan system of choosing leaders, select and elect. And we cannot just say because it's a functioning state that we can postpone it. We don't do this in the case of other African states, for example, where you have military government and these governments were suspended from their membership for not using civilian rule. We see in Libya that this is a main charge to get the people to get involved in elections. And we see it at the struggle of the people of Senegal who said that they must be involved and they are being given there. So let's hope that the government will get going and not find a reason at the end to say we cannot move to participatory democracy in Somalia.
That was One Man's Point of View, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under Secretary General for Political Affairs. It's Sunday on Nightline Africa. This is the time we get to relax and reflect, a flashback with music from the continent. You know I love you so much, so sweet. You are my heart, heartbeat. You are my love and my sweetie. You know I love you so much, so sweetie. You are my heart and heartbeat. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Na ukweli ni kwamba mi mwenyewe na kukubali. So polish me up, but baby don't dust me off, 'cause I got my own pain and that always make me tough like. Mommy, holding me tightly, nightly. You like a diamond in the rough, babe. I'm on my grind, so don't console me. I got my fella looking up, babe. 'Cause baby, one of the things that I hope I'm into, I know, but I don't see. Meaning one hour can be. I mean, at least say, I mean that I'm on my way. Wait, 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 wait.
Miami.
Such a thing.
You are my love and my sweetie. You know I love you so much, so sweetie. You are my heart and Okay, so ni metakata, I am what you after. But before we take it there, I want some smiling and laughter. Enough with the chatter, cause we stay low-key. And if you think you knew what you know as before, it's on me. Tongue twisting at your waist, make you pause the beat. Now reka shida zangu chini, kikukubali unasama mahabani. Bila kugusa mina shikarona upendo. Unavyo tetembea taratiba mwendo. Unanikosha mami uzuri wa macho. Unavyo tabasam na hicho kicheko. Mina ishi wanahama bakina special. Play that guitar for me. You be my harmony. Ewa nikosha mahabani. Pende nizame mapenzi ni. Hey, play that guitar for me, girl. You be my harmony. Ewa nikosha mahabani. Denise, I'm in my prison.
Yeah, yeah, do. You are my love and my sweetie. You know I love you so much, so sweetie. You are my heart and heartbeat. You are my love and my sweetie. You know I love you so much, so sweetie. You are my heart and heartbeat. Yeah,
game, seeking the fame that we did not gain. But boy, she know how to shake that thing. How to reach that thing. Gotta play that string. I play that music when the night falls. Play the record that we rock and we'll be right for. All the girls in the late night flow. You made that fall. You shake that fall.
Doesn't she know that she's more than feeling down? Girl, don't do that. You don't ever do all it. Just put it on.
Little thing to love me like ya, a romantic girl. Pretty thing to love me like ya. I need a romantic girl. Pretty little thing to love me like ya, a romantic girl. Pretty thing to love me like ya.
Love me like ya.
She like the sound of that. I hate the sound of us apart, we like the sound of this. So we've been partners from the side, we've been mad ever since. I like to lose her in the dark, I think I found a kiss.
I think she thinks I'm fine. I think she loves my style. I'm going to make her mine. Oh, mine. Oh, I.
Girl, don't you think I'm fine?
Girl, don't you love my style?
I'm going to make you mine. Oh, mine. Oh, I.
I want a romantic girl. Pretty little thing to love me like, yeah. A romantic girl. Pretty thing to love me like, yeah.
Family people, tell me where to need them. Oh no,
they get issues so they can't stand a love. It be old time people wasting night jam at school. Cut it all, twisted them, them once spoiled a love. Tell me waiting, be them, oh no. Can't I love Nigeria, baby? Nigeria, big love, you can't guide you. See when they come together, just like he is supposed to be. Nigeria, guide love, Ghana, baby. Ghana, girl, love, be Nigeria, guide you. Nice one to book together. The love they like supposed to be. We no stop for it. Circle to a jungle. A mad love be what we get. We the conquer them. Mad love as the sunset. I be buying you Prada bags and more. Honey, you making sweet macada and cocoa. We for shop some money from the oil and gold. Party we the party so. So wine and she pop on the go. She the wine like she dey on top of moto. Post this on a boy set, I'll get some more. Feel like going down to Togo. Guys like Nigeria, baby. Nigeria, big love, she gonna guide you. See when they come together. Just like he's supposed to be. Nigeria, guide love, gonna be. Gonna girl, love me, Nigeria, guide you. Nice one to be together. Supposed to bring love. Even when we feel that the economic is harder, that is when the loving and the liking getting harder. Nobody be moving while you're sipping on your lager. I know won't be blinking, I just want to see you longer. You give me a melody and you beat me hunger. To quench my fire within the leader water tanker. So baby, you mean more to me than CDs and Nairas. And if you wear the money, baby, I'll take up the bribe.
That was our Sunday music spot. Hope you enjoyed the music from Nightline Africa here at the English to Africa service of the Voice of America in Washington. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know, by now we're on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, including producer Nicole Peters and engineer Justin Thwaite, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, it's only the chew stick that knows the secrets of the mouth. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Good evening, Africa. Come on,
you come around and you don't ask for me. I need to move in your direction, but I wanna feel it naturally.
I wanna make you come my way, girl, make you come my way. I got a thing for you, I've been thinking.